This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Xiaoning. It is 7.06 in the morning, Tuesday the 6th of August, and financial markets have continued spending time in the red after China escalated the trade war with the US.
And if you look at the Asian markets, very sharp falls all across. Nikkei was down 1.8%. Hong Kong down almost 3%. And Shanghai, China down 1.5%. Korea is 2.6% down. Singapore is 2%. And even the usually subdued FBM KLCI, that's down a pretty sharp 1%.
But that was yesterday, so I cannot imagine how markets will open today, right?
That's
because
right.
We've had a spate of bad news overnight. I mean, if we look at US markets, right, they saw their biggest drop this year. And of course, there's been a rally in global bonds, and even safe haven assets like gold, yen, the Swiss franc have rallied in tandem. Other metals have also gone down, actually.
That's the so-called flight to safety, right? When
yeah.
you have this kind of buying of gold.
So exactly $700 billion evaporated from US equities overnight. Dow closed 2.9% down. There was, at one point, the Dow surpassed 700 points down as Apple and IBM slid at least 4%. S&P was also down 3%. All but 11 companies in the gauge actually traded lower. And of course, the tech heavy, which is definitely the most impacted by all these trade sanctions, is down 3.5%.
And beyond that as well, the CBOE volatility index surged about 40%. 10-year Treasury yields dropped to the lowest since before President Donald Trump's election. And China's yuan sank beyond 7 per dollar, a move which we will discuss later as well after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. In the meantime, for another take on the repercussions of the escalating U.S.-China trade war, we have on the line with us Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management in New York. Thank you for joining us, Joe. Now, yesterday, the yuan weakened beyond the psychological threshold of 7, sending Asian stock markets downward, and the U.S. has also designated China as a currency manipulator. What's your read of the situation? Is this a calculated move by China in response to the higher tariffs, and how should investors position themselves in the event of an all-out currency war?
Well, it was calculated on the part of China, for sure, but not unexpected given the fact that China was going to respond to the 10% threat of tariffs. So tit for tat, protectionism is worrying the markets. And how do you position for this? I mean, a lot of clients are just, you know, if they have cash, there's no hurry to deploy it to see how this plays out. So we've gone from a truce in trade to an escalation. You can see clearly in all the markets globally, all asset classes, it's risk off. So right now, it's kind of just to hunker down and see how this plays out.
I think, Joe, the other thing that might confuse the policymakers a little bit is the U.S. jobs data, which is very strong, and especially in the retail sector as well, which that was the only sector which employed actually fewer people. So how do you see this playing out as far as policymaking is concerned?
Well, it's a good question because it does complicate Jay Powell's problem in terms of maintaining full employment, raising inflation. We're not going to get inflation anywhere near the Fed target if we're in a trade war and more deflationary forces are building. So I think it puts more pressure and expectation on the Fed to cut rates again in September. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure what good that's going to do if you have the United States and China still fighting over agriculture, technology, global supply chain. So I almost, you know, becoming a little bit more bearish here in terms of what monetary policy globally can do. We need a fiscal stimulus from the G20, but that's very hard when you got the two largest economies in the world in a trade war.
And meanwhile, U.S. Treasuries, of course, the yields continue to fall, and similar trends are also seen in Europe and Japan. So in this era of ultra-low or even negative yield bonds, where can investors put their money in this asset class?
Well, I mean, there's bond proxies, utilities, staples, but you're right. It's remarkable that when you look at Switzerland and Germany, the whole yield curve is negative, which is remarkable. And that just, there's a lot of work to be done in getting this fiscal stimulus underway, getting inflation back on track. There's more deflation than inflation. So the bond proxies will do well. I would be holding on to my dividend payers because cash flow is still good amongst companies here in the United States, the large cap companies, albeit there's out trade problems. So really, you know, to me, it, you know, cash could be king here again very shortly. The bond proxies, and then the dividend payers.
And Joe, oil's also seen a drop following concerns over the escalating trade tensions and news of yet another foreign tanker seizure by Iran. In your view, what are the biggest pressure points on the oil market, and how does this affect your outlook on it?
Well, I think the biggest pressure on the oil markets is actually the lack of demand. It's not supply-driven, and I know Straits of Hormuz is very important, obviously, when it comes to getting the supply out to global markets. But you know, the global economy is weakening. There's no doubt. There's Japan-Korea trade war problems there. ASEAN nations, including Malaysia, weakening. China, obviously, having problems. The United States slowing. I think in the oil markets, it's more about the lack of demand and supply. So these issues are important in Straits of Hormuz, but I think, you know, oil prices, I think they kind of tend to sag as opposed to spike here in the near term.
Thank you so much, Joe. And that was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, of the opinion that the problem in the oil markets is really the lack of demand rather than the supply squeeze caused by geopolitical tensions in the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, I think this this tiff between the U.S. and China is...
Is it a tiff, Julian, or is it an oil
Yeah,
war?
It's a little tiff, you know, like out of the bedroom between the two leading economies in the world. I don't know. I mean, once you brand an entire country as a currency manipulator, it's I don't know how you can sort of reverse that and get out of that, because that will come with its own set of retaliations, reprisals coming out of the US, right?
Exactly. It seems like China is taking a very hard stance, right, as of last night when they decided to move their currency ban. I don't know whether their idea is like, let's just wait Trump out, right? Because re-elections are coming in 2020. If we're lucky, the man won't be in the White House next year, and then we'll deal with, hopefully, in their mind, maybe a more reasonable president. So why not, you know? And then everybody needs to show political might in this current mood, right?
Now, don't forget also, because we'll be to tune in after the 7:30 news, because we will be taking a deeper look at the Chinese yuan. In the meantime, though, there has also been some news out of HSBC, because they've abruptly ousted their CEO after just 18 months, citing an increasingly complex environment. And they've also announced a whole new round of job cuts.
Yeah, the complex environment is due to the fact that HSBC gets 80% of their income out of Asia. And we know what's happening in Asia. We just talked about that little tiff between Trump and Xi Jinping. In that sense, HSBC is really in a hard place. But also, I think Mark Tucker was an outsider. He was hired for the purpose to move HSBC along quicker. But I think internally, they felt that he wasn't moving HSBC in the direction that was desired, mainly following the old paths and so on, like the old way of doing things.
You mean that John Flint, who is the CEO, had tiffs with the chairman, right, Mark Tucker?
That's right. Mark Tucker himself is also from outside of HSBC.
Yeah, he used to be the CEO of Prudential, actually, in the past. But sources from Bloomberg say they clash over style. Flint focused on cultural issues at the firm, whilst Tucker took a more data-driven approach. And after a while, apparently, Tucker just grew impatient with the execution of strategic priorities, especially Flint's inability to boost US business.
So apparently another bit of a factor in this bedroom, this squabble, I guess, similar to the bedroom squabble that you described between the US and China there, Julian, is that Tucker was increasingly at odds with Flint over the CEO's focus on expanding in China. So HSBC was in a bit of an uncomfortable spot over Washington's legal and political tussle with Chinese tech company Huawei, who's a major client of the bank. And US prosecutors drew on HSBC's relationship with Huawei to build its case against an executive at the telecom companies. The Financial Times reported that just last month.
So who's going to take over for the time being is Noel Quinn, who is currently head of global commercial banking, and he would assume the post of acting CEO until they find somebody new to come in. I think the preference there is still for an outsider to come in.
Well, HSBC has its fair share of issues. I mean, even from the financial crisis from 2008. If you look at the share price performance, it's actually on a year-to-date, it's already down 6%, which isn't so bad when you consider the rest of the region is down. But it's also a question of what do you do with such a large bank in Asia, right? I think there was questions about whether it could be more better in terms of return on equity, whether that was a bit sluggish versus some of its more nimble peers. Also, they had some compliance issues where they were faced with some fines in the past.
Yeah, so and during Flint's short tenure as well, the 235,000 employee bank, as well as which is Europe's biggest by market value, they've grappled with a declining stock price, a high-profile sexual harassment case at their investment bank, as well as the failure to hit cost targets. And HSBC also does make most of its money oiling the wheels of trade between the East and the West, and they've faced repeated questions about why a business which is heavily skewed towards some of the world's fastest-growing economies doesn't seem to be making more money. And one of Flint's key promises was that revenue gains would outpace cost increases, a trend the bank refers to as positive jaws. And he didn't manage to achieve that in his first year at the helm, although the bank said on Monday that a first half adjusted jaws was a positive 4.5%.
Yeah, I think the fact that they couldn't make more money and just squeeze out more growth is reflected by that $1 billion share buyback they've embarked on, and that means that you don't have any other use for your money, and therefore using that to buy back stock and giving that back to your shareholders.
Now, we also mentioned that HSBC is planning to cut jobs and that they're planning to cut more than 4,000 posts. This is according to CFO Stevenson in a call with analysts, warning that senior executives would be a focus of the cutbacks. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.